This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 148. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome back to the show, Berners. You are currently schlepping around the UK with the cricket trade shows that are going on at the moment, the Cricket Resource Show, is that right?
Well, a mixture of that and growing a big ginger beard, which keeps me warm. Yes. I've got more hair on my cheeky chops these days and on top of my noggin, but that's old age for you, I guess. But yeah, we've visited London, and we're at Birmingham Edgbaston, which was nice to see their new development of their new stadium last week. And we head to Leeds on Saturday. So if there's anyone out there that wants to come down and have a little bowl on Pitch Vision and be involved with a number of the leading companies in the cricket industry, then drop us a mail or drop us a call and we can fix some tickets up for them for sure.
Gareth, what are your thoughts on beards, yes or no?
On beards, well, I've sort of gone through phases, and generally I'm a bit of a subcontinental beard man. So I used to get fairly lazy out there, I think. And unfortunately, when we came back for the Mumbai attacks with England, I was pictured coming through the departures and gates and looking particularly ridiculous. I've been looking more like Hassan Amla, I think, than Matthew Pryor, who I often got mistaken for anyway, which was much to Matthew's dismay. So with me and Berners around, I think Matt Pryor doesn't need to get any celebrity doubles in.
I always find it's very annoying on the old helmet with the strap going underneath the chin, and quite often I used to get out on purpose just so I could release that pressure.
Right. Okay. That's the best.
I had a bat in the helmet when I had a beard, but yeah, that's a good point, actually. Good point.
Well, if it doesn't bother Hashim Amla, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it doesn't seem to bother him. He's had a fantastic last couple of years, hasn't he? You know, his stock's really risen. And I mean, going off topic slightly, but Stuart Broad always used to think he was very, very difficult to bowl at because you had to keep your line so tight, and he had an ability to hit it past point off front and back foot with ease, and then if you come slightly straight, to be able to whip you through mid-wicket, and what a great player he's turned into.
I thought for a second there you were going to say Stuart Broad thinks he bowls better with a beard, but I don't know whether he can even grow one by the looks of him.
Well, that's a good point, David. That's a good point. I'm not sure Broad is going to be the biggest beard grower in the world.
No, he might need a few more years before he gets behind that. It took me a good few years to be able to grow a proper beard anyway, so I know that pain.
Mine's not real.
It's not real.
Stick it on.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've in the cricketing world, we've had the IPL auction this week, and there's been some big money signings and some lesser money signings. And it kind of every time that there's the IPL auction, it reminds me of that that book and now film about baseball, Moneyball, where a coach found out some statistics about baseball players that were that weren't the headline statistics that meant he could pick them up quite cheaply and build a winning team. So, Gareth, you're involved with the IPL. It's not necessarily true that the players with the highest value are going to be the ones that fit best into any team, and that's true at any level, really, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, there's skills that are associated with IPL, and you can see the sides that have really done their analysis and what the skills associated with success are. And without giving too much away, Mumbai Indians have made two interesting signings in terms of their bowling department in the left armers. So they've obviously done their homework on the effectiveness of left arm bowlers. But there's some interesting ones. Brad Hogg, very interesting one. Had put his cricket career on a hold before the Big Bash. You know, he was out at PNG doing some coaching out in Papua New Guinea, and all of a sudden he's had to give that up because he's had a second coming as a cricketer. And so, you know, some interesting movements.
Berners, do you, when you're playing in a team, do you prefer it when there's a couple of superstars around so you can sit back and relax and let them do all the work, or do you like, do you prefer it when it's a really tight knit unit and everyone's doing their specific job but there's no real superstars?
I don't know, a little bit of both. I think it's always, I always felt refreshingly reassured when I saw certain people rock up in the changing room or you know, just in that environment. You often knew what they were capable of doing, and you hope that possibly today they would activate the plan as they normally do. So whether they were superstars or just good players, that remains to be seen. But yeah, I think they both have their merits of having a tight, nice, tight knit, you know, compact team where everyone plays their part, and you know you've got a good, solid foundation to win the game. Then it's always stand you in good stead, kind of mentally from the start as well, to know that the other guys around you are going to chip in and help out and essentially, you know, build partnerships or give you the confidence that you need throughout the day. So I guess even though amateur cricket is reliant on that, I guess at the professional end as well, you don't get through the IPL to the final without having that tight-knit set of players that can all play and activate all those plans that the coach is putting in place.
And taking that idea of superstars and high-value players back to kind of the amateur game and club cricket and that type of cricket, you can learn a lesson as well, because I think I've certainly played in teams where, you know, big superstars come in. You know, perhaps thinking back to the time when I played second 11 cricket and somebody came in from the first team who, you know, for some reason that, you know, they couldn't play the away game or something, but they were a top first team player and they came in and played for the second team. And I think you can, certainly with batsmen, you can relax a little bit and think, well, this is great. This guy's definitely going to do all the work for it, get all the runs for us. So all we need to do is hang around at the other end. And then you kind of panic a bit if he gets out for a low score or, you know, doesn't quite come off. So a superstar can affect the psychology of a team, I think.
It can do, and long batting lineups on paper can affect the psychology because everybody leaves it to everybody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the big dangers whenever players who invariably get into that mindset of saying, oh, look at our batting lineup, we've got so-and-so going in at 10. Well, it means nothing if nobody takes responsibility. Similarly, you know, with bowling lineups, if you've got six or seven bowling, you still need somebody to take the game by the scruff of the neck and do what Glenn McGrath used to do and just say, well, I've got the ball in my hand, so it's my job to do the job. And if somebody else doesn't get a bowl, then so be it. You know, and it's all about taking responsibility. And so whether you're the superstar or whether you're the number five or six, when that opportunity comes along, just nail it. Well, I think you look at the way that I know England didn't bat very well at all out in the UAE in the test matches, but just looking at the approach that Stuart Broad had every time that he went to a wicket, and obviously they were in adverse situations every time he went in, but what I like about the way that Stuart Broad plays his cricket is he's always the man, whether he's got the ball in his hand or whether he's got the bat in the hand. He's always looks as if he thinks he's the man that can do the job, and a game is never lost when he's at the wicket. He almost considers himself to be an opening bowler and an opening batter in his mentality. And I think it's one that a lot of club cricketers can look to try and take on some of that approach that he shows when he goes out to the wicket. You know, the game always goes forward when Broadie's involved, and that's why he's one of my favourite cricketers.
It's interview time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and we're joined by an old friend of the show, Gary Palmer, who's the Pitch Vision Academy batting coach. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hi, Dave. Good to be back.
Gary, we have not heard from you for a little while, and as I understand it, you've been keeping yourself busy with a new session that you've been taking around to some of the first and second team counties here in the UK. So what have you been doing there?
Well, basically, I've come up with a system through sort of years of coaching and trying lots of different things. I've come up with a really, really simple system of four angles and four swings done on a bowling machine in a specific order that constructs technique, it enhances it, it challenges it, and you can also use it as a fault identification system. And basically, it works in such a way that the batsman has to work from a slightly more open position to deal with all the angles initially, or the first two angles. So by the time they get to the last angle, and the ball's now swinging away over the wicket, they actually are well balanced and well aligned because of the sequence of angles. The sequence of angles minimises tipping to the offside, minimises playing around the front pad, and just homes the player in to keeping their head wicket to wicket, driving through mid-on and straight, and very straight mid-off. So finally, when you then go into a net session the next day or in the afternoon, and the bowlers are all bowling outside off the stump, the batter's playing well-balanced and well-aligned and not tipping over. The problem we get in this country, I think, is when you go into an indoor cricket school, you always see the bowling machines placed over the wicket, swinging away from the right-hander, because that's where most of the people will be bowling from. While that's good as a tactical practice, if you go straight into that, you know, first couple of sessions in the winter, you can be lured into tipping to the offside because you're always wanting to go that way. And every time I do a one-to-one, I always go in a particular sequence of angles to get my player tuned in to good technique really quickly. And it works 100% of the time.
Can you remember when you first came up with the idea, when you first started to think, hang on a minute, there's a bit more to this than just plonking the bowling machine on, down where it's always put and setting the swing on two and then just getting them to play? When did that first sort of come into your head?
I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I did it on my academy, because I noticed then, and I'm noticing now when I go around to a number of counties, there's a hell of a lot of players. It tends to be what I would call slightly too sideways on. And if you're too sideways on, if you think of the target area in the V between mid-on and mid-off, the minute you're too sideways, that target area is cut in half. So every time we've had an academy session, I've sort of done this angle, then this angle. And then as the years have gone by, I've added a few more because I know where I'm trying to go with it all. With the body position, I've just played around the angles until I thought, well, why not put this together in a one-to-one session and do them all one after another? That you could do that on a regular basis to keep your technique sort of highly tuned. But you can use it in a group environment, or you can use it as a squad. But what I've found with it is that, coupled with this new idea I have with these angles and this tuning in technique, it makes me see that over the textbook and some of the things that were coached on courses about particularly foot positioning and front shoulder positioning, that I feel I've got a different take on that. I'm not reinventing the wheel. This is the wheel. This is nothing new. But I think I've seen a lot of players play over the years. I've had a real interest in technique. And I would say, I picked on a particular technique which isn't the one that's in the textbook. It's been out there for a while, but we've chosen to sort of go along the lines with what Joe Average does rather than what the greatest players in the world do. Good coaching is not talking about it, doing lots of fancy things. Good coaching is making the bloke the other end improve. And that's what I feel that this system does. It even gets the player to work out for themselves what's the best position to be in to play all the angles. And what I'm finding is that if the back foot turns in slightly, if you push your head forward more, the back foot will begin to turn in earlier and more. With your left shoulder, if you're right-handed, slightly out of the way, that puts you in a really well-balanced and aligned position. You're not tipping to the offside, therefore you won't play around your front pad. But you see a lot of English cricketers, because of what they've been taught over the years, they try and keep their back foot parallel, really, really sideways on when they step forward. And when the ball's at the mid and leg stump, yes, they try to open out, but they do it by dropping their front leg out towards the leg side rather than pointing the front foot up mid and leg and swiveling both feet so they're straight. So you just open the top half while keeping your feet in a straight line. That's where I differ from what has been taught for years and years and years.
And how many people would you say have gone through your academy and been taught using this method? And how many of those would you say you've noticed a marked improvement since you started doing it?
every single player that goes through my academy does that, because we all, as coaches, we all have to be saying the same thing as far as techniques are concerned. Tactics can vary, but I get all my coaches to buy into this, and we're all teaching the kids to do the same. And if anyone was the one to walk in to watch my academy lads playing, I'd like us as coaches to be judged on what someone would see. And when you watch them all batting, every single one of them has a really, really good batting technique. Obviously, some are closer to perfection than others, but I feel we've given them a technique and a system and a method that makes batting as easy as you possibly can make it for a particular player. Rather than leave people to try this and try that, or maybe they've read something in a book here and they'll try that and try this, it may not be right. And if it's not right, yeah, well, you've got to keep trying lots of different things till you find the best way of doing something. But if some coaches can come up with, this is the best way and it does work, then you'd be foolish not to actually stick to that and do that.
You mentioned earlier that it makes a very quick difference to a player as well. You know, you can see a significant improvement in the way that someone is playing, even in one session. How long would you say it takes to get that technique locked down significantly for the average player?
It varies from person to person. Obviously, what you can find difficult sometimes is if they're not buying into what you're saying. Because it's different. That's a difficulty. But once they do buy in and you've got them 100% beating out the palm of your hand, if they're practicing a lot and they're doing these angles in the right progression, they should get their techniques in order quicker than most other people. But it's very difficult to put a time limit on it.
But it is one of these magical things that you can go to a session with someone that you've never worked with before, and in front of a group of other coaches, you can say, here's a significant difference you can make almost instantly within one session, right?
You can make a difference within 10 balls if you know what you're looking for. I mean, we had some boys I had some boys give me to work with at Northants, and the first thing that I would do just to find out what their techniques are like would put the machine left arm over, swinging the ball back into them. And anybody who is two sideways on or blocked off or have that back foot two sideways and they're stepping forward, they're going to find it very hard to play this angle. And by putting them in the set position for an on drive and getting them to hit some balls through the target area and then getting them to do it from their stance, It shouldn't take more than about 10, 15 balls if you're telling them the correct information. If you're giving them duff information, it's going to take a hell of a lot longer. And once you have a good technique, it is a hell of a lot easier to deliver your game plans more effectively. If you've got a sort of rough around the edges technique, then your game plans, I think, will be flawed and inconsistent.
Well, Gary, there'll be people who want to know the absolute, you know, the secret of it, the magic sequence. You're not going to give that out today, though, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to give it out today. But I will. We will put it up on the Pitch Vision backing site at some point, I'm sure. But you know, it's so simple. You could near enough gag somebody, put some masking tape around their mouth, put them on a bowling machine, do 15 minutes of each angle with a target area, and the player's going to get better anyway. But then if you can step in and give off little intricate bits of information to sort of hone that player into even better technique, then you'll improve them really, really quickly.
And if anybody who is really chomping at the bit to find out what they can do is go to pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer, all one word, and they can put their email down to get a copy of your coaching notebook that is online. And also we will send out an email when they can get the rest of the information about this four-angle coaching session. So, Gary, thanks very much for coming on the show today.
No problem. Enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Dave.
Time now for the panel to answer your cricket coaching questions in the questions section. And this week we have a couple of questions that we've picked from the mailbag to compete for Ed, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Berners, you have the questions there. So what have we got this week?
Yeah, we got a first question from Hisham, who's playing club cricket over in Dubai. He's been out injured for about the last 6 weeks with a bad shoulder injury. And after coming back, he's turned up to his first training session and he's saying he's completely forgotten how to bat. So quite an unfortunate thing to happen, really. But obviously his body mechanics and his coordination's not quite there after this injury. So he's just wondering if he could get some expert advice as to what he could do to potentially get this all going again. I hope you remember to take your bat, Hashim.
Yeah, of course, Bob Willis famously forgot to take his bat out once, didn't he? Which probably showed the standard of his batting. But I don't think it would be completely forgotten. Presumably he still knows how to hold the bat and and all the rest of it, slightly exaggerating the problem. Gareth, how would you go about getting to the root of the problem with this guy?
Well, the first thing is that he hasn't forgotten. It doesn't matter whether it's 6 weeks or whether it's 6 years. Your neural pathways allowed you to play a cover drive and to flick one off your legs and play a defensive shot that were in place 6 weeks ago are still there. And it's just a matter of reconnecting with them, really, and making them more efficient. And that can come from doing some very, very basic practice. Some driving range practice almost, you know, getting some tennis balls out on tees, just standing there, stepping into the ball, hitting it, will reconnect those neural pathways and it will start to flow. I'm a big fan of driving range practice, and we've been doing a lot of work here on squash courts at Millfield School, and the guys haven't got tired of it because they're doing that work on the squash courts and we're having nets and they're seeing the results come from practicing good habits and reconnecting with the good things that they've already got within their batting technique, and then they go into nets and it just flows. So if it's happening for these guys here at Millfield School, then it will definitely happen for Hashim as well. Sometimes it's difficult after 6 weeks to have a net and for everything to flow, but that's why I quite like driving range practice, getting the tees out, maybe throwing a ball up against the wall and hitting it back again.
Only a really small one and a very simple one, but a coach used to tell me that just sitting there and just bouncing the ball in the middle of your bat takes your eyes and also your top hand to actually control that. And it's quite good to actually feel the ball just popping in the middle of the sweet spot of the bat. So it's something very basic, but it just gets your feeling of what it should feel like back. And then obviously stimulates your mind and gives you a bit of confidence to kind of start to bring that into training. And that's what it should feel like when you're hitting the ball lovely and flush in the middle of the bat.
Yeah, especially if you've sort of lost that that idea of watching the ball closely. You're just sort of generally looking in the direction of the bowler and you're not really thinking exactly where the ball is coming from, which you can do. We don't know if this is happening to Hisham, but that it can certainly happen that way. And, you know, something simple like bouncing the ball on a bat just gives you that watching the ball and concentrating on the ball, and it's very simple and easy to do. You can do it on your own. Although something Mark you said earlier reminds me of the joke where the guy who breaks his fingers in an accident and he goes to the doctor and says, when they're healed, will I be able to play the piano? And the doctor says, yeah, well, yes, of course you will. And the guy says, that's great, because I couldn't do it before. But
and it's true, you know.
But you can when you're back.
A new skill, whereas your pianist is, isn't he? You know, he's expecting to be able to do things without having done it before. Whereas Hashim has got that experience. He's been a batter of note. He certainly considers his batting to be better than his bowling. So it will come. You just got to let it happen and reconnect.
Next question's from Jeff, and sounds like we've got a bit of a back foot bully. They got a player out there who likes to hang off the back foot and give it a good smack off of the back foot, and they just want to draw him forwards and give him a bit more of a, you know, shot array by getting him playing off of the front foot. So they're asking what kind of drills he could do in pre-season training to get that going for next season.
This is an interesting one because I was. This is me all over when I played. absolutely me all over, and I was somebody who was very comfortable playing off the back foot. I did some work with Desmond Haynes one winter, which probably came a little bit too late in my career, but I found it very interesting from a coaching perspective, which is where I wanted to take my career after that. And one of the things that he did, and it goes a little bit back to our previous question, is he got me to really, really watch the ball. And we did some bowling machine practice where he would put chalk dots onto the ball and get me to really watch the ball and then to watch where the ball pitched. And initially, I wasn't at all sure about where the ball pitched. And I was like 3 or 4 foot, sometimes even more out in terms of the length of the ball, where the ball was pitching, which was affecting my judgment. And then I was simply going into my favourite shot and playing the ball on merit. And over the course of about 4 or 5 months, Desi got me to start to pick the length of the ball just simply by watching the ball a bit better. And then my body would start to associate with that length and getting back into that ball. And I started to hit the ball down the ground. I started to hit the ball through the cover. And I started to hit the ball through straight mid-wicket as well. And it purely came down to the fact that I wasn't watching the ball hard enough. And I wasn't really picking up length on the front foot very easy. And that can be developed. And I thought that was a great drill. And obviously in the days of pitch vision now, we've got some objective feedback that could help that player even more so, instead of it being two people just having a guess of where the ball landed.
Would you say that it's more helpful to be able to see someone bowling and the release point than using a bowling machine, or is it better to have the bowling machine because it's going to give you the accuracy to make sure that everything's full?
Ideally, you want to move towards a bowler because that's what the game's about, isn't it?
It's reacting
to stimulus, it's reacting to the physical cues of a bowler. And as a general rule, I'm not a massive fan of bowling machines because they take away those physical cues that you can pick so much from. But in this particular drill, to start building up the confidence of the player, because this will be a very new thing for them, a bowling machine with its accuracy will be something that helps them. And obviously as a coach, you've got the option of playing with a couple of buttons and changing the length very subtly, so they're not just looking into an area, but they're actually tracking the ball all the way. And it certainly helped me. It's not as if I couldn't shadow a forward drive perfectly, or it's not as if I couldn't do my driving range drills perfectly. I could do them just as well as I could my back foot shots. It was just that I wasn't reacting to the stimulus of the right length to be able to unleash those shots. And once we made the connection between the two, then all of a sudden I could start to put more pressure onto the bowler. And Jeff's player that he's talking about here has obviously got a great back foot game. And I'm sure he knows the player knows how to play off the front foot as well. But it's just identifying that ball that you can come forward to is proven to be a bit of a problem. Paul Collingwood sometimes got into that habit of just hanging back. And then when he was at his best, he was able to really commit back into the ball. And that's when he had his most success, both in one-day international cricket and also in test match cricket.
And yeah, I was going to mention that as well about having the confidence to be able to get forward as well. I know from doing some coaching at my local club, there's some young cricketers who, because of the nets that we play on, they're very bouncy. And, you know, the younger ones, you know, 12, 13, 14, anything that isn't really pitched up is they have to play back to because of the bounce is so high. Yeah. So it could be that he's thinking to himself, I'm a bit nervous about getting forward because I don't want it, you know, I don't want one hitting me in the chest or catching me in the midriff or something like that. So it's important to make sure that you're practicing on a surface which gives you the confidence to play, and also you're making sure that when you are going forward, you do make that decision to go forward, and you have made that connection, that you're confident that you're going to execute the skill as well as you can without fear and without worrying about, you know, leaning back and hitting it in the air to cover or something like that. So I think there's definitely a psychological element to it as well. Time now for the soapbox. And of course, every week, one of the panel gets the chance to rant and to get angry or give their opinion on something for a full minute without getting interrupted by anybody else. So this week it's Berners. Berners, over to you.
Very topical this week with earlier discussion about a superstar in the team, and no need to introduce the guy, but Sachin Tendulkar chasing his 100th 100, and just constant drivel from the media, from fans alike, about how this is affecting the Indian team and so on and so forth, and almost, you know, using it as a catalyst almost for their recent demise, which I think is an absolute load of tosh. At the end of the day, they're all professional players. They've all got their own game plans. They've all got their own strength mentally, and you can't say that one guy's ability to not achieve a major landmark can be a defining part of a whole team's failure. So, buck up your ideas. Stop blaming Sachin. His 100 will come, and enjoy him being a part of it of a great team.
Oh, Berners, you've fallen short by 10 seconds.
Oh, I've not got a lot more to say.
There you go, that's 10 seconds. Well done. Congratulations.
I need that 10 seconds to go and trim my beard a little bit more.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point, mate.
Well, that's fail of the week for Berners. But never mind, we'll be back to a full minute next week, hopefully, when Gareth takes the hot seat.
I just always get caught short, lads. That's the trouble.
And that's all we've got time for this week. But before we go, we are going to pick a winner of the prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can get coaching from great names in batting, bowling and fielding and all other support elements of cricket at pitchvision.com/academy. So, Gareth, which question did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go with Jeff's one, but it's such a selfish reason, because as I was reading the question when you sent it through the other day, I was like, oh my God, that's me. So, so just purely because it hit a chord with myself and my own development as a cricketer, I'm going to go with Jeff's question.
Congratulations, Jeff, and you can pick a prize from Pitch Vision Academy's courses section. And if anyone else listening wants to win that prize, then all you need to do is send in your question and make it a good one, and it gets picked as the winning one. So it sounds like if you can find something which Mark Garraway can resonate with, then you've got even more chance of winning. So,
good point.
So, Berners, what is the ways that people can get in touch with us with their questions?
Give us a quick call, 020-88-167-691, or drop us an email, coach@pitchvision.com. We could also fire the racing pigeon up to come and collect some mail if need be as well.
Yeah, exactly. The racing pigeon is poised, as is our Twitter, which is at PV Cricket Coach, and also our Facebook page, which is Pitch Vision Academy. Just do a search for that. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so in iTunes. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click subscribe. And if you like what we do, make sure you leave a review in there. If you don't like using iTunes, you want to listen in another way, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Find the podcast section, and you've got the feed for the weekly podcast. Comes out every Friday. And you can just stick that into your phone or however you want to listen to it without having to check back. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.